originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm your host, Christina McManigal. I am joining you tonight from our Jimmy John's of Lexington, Kentucky studio, and I would like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219 and our new channel, XM201, and also to those of you tuning into our website, at www.horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. So if you're able to help, please visit the website. That's www.pdjf.org. So our guest tonight has won leading rider titles at Hoosier Park, Oaklawn, Kentucky Downs, and Prairie Meadows. He's a multiple graded stakes winning jockey, having won the Black Eyed Susan in 2009 with Peyton DiOro and the Arkansas Derby in 2003 with Sir Cherokee. That's just to name a few. He set a record at Hoosier Park, winning 7 races in one day, with 3,257 wins and over $67 million in earnings. It is an honor to introduce jockey Terry Thompson. Terry, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Glad to be on the show.
Great to have you, Terry. And you recently flew back from the Sunland Derby. You rode Shane Zane for Doug O'Neill on Saturday.
Saturday I rode Gracita for Doug in New Orleans and then flew to the Sunland Derby yesterday and rode Shane Zane. So it was a busy weekend.
Wow. Yeah, I'd say. How did the weekend go for you?
Ran third in New Orleans, horse run a big race, and then the Sunland Derby, finished mid-pack. Was hoping to, you know, have a little better finish, but that's horse racing.
That's right. Do you know what their plans are next for that horse?
I do not. I believe the string at Oaklawn are fixing to ship to Keeneland, so I'm sure you'll see them in Kentucky. I know they've been leaning towards a flat mile with that horse, and they like that one turn at Churchill, so I'm sure he'll pop in over there.
Good to know. Yeah, Keeneland's right around the corner. Will you be making an appearance here in Kentucky?
Probably not. Just we overlap with Oaklawn, and I'll try to finish up, you know, over here in Hot Springs, and unless something came up. But right now it looks like I'll be just finishing in Hot Springs.
Well, and you've done so well there at Oaklawn Park over the years, Terry. And tell us more about that track and why you found such great success there.
Just a lot of trainers and owners gave me a lot of great opportunities over the years. And it's like any other business. Once you get rolling, it's kind of easier. They come to you. And I've had a lot of success in Hot Springs. And I'd been coming here since the late 90s. 99, I believe, was my first year. And like you said, before the show, a couple titles and several seconds. And, you know, I've had some big wins over here. And I've ridden a lot of great horses to come out of Oaklawn Park.
Well, tell us, Terry, I myself have never been to Oakland Park, and it's definitely on my bucket list, but I hear that it's a great track, and the people really come out to the races. I've heard it called, you know, Little Saratoga, as far as the crowd you get.
It really is. I compare it to Saratoga, like you said, Keeneland meet, Del Mar. I always tell people that are familiar with the races, it kind of reminds me of like pre-simulcast era, when if you wanted to watch a horse race, you had to go to the horse races. 2 weeks ago on, I believe, our Rebel Day, we had, you know, over 37,000 just live at the races fans. So it's a lot of fun to ride here, because you get the roar of the crowd, and there's several people, and it's just a huge race town. Anywhere you go after the races, before the races, you'll just hear people talking and have their racing forms out on their table eating dinner, and everywhere you go, they love the horse racing here in Hot Springs.
Why do you think that is? Do you think it's a good job by the track as far as marketing, or why do you think the reason is?
I do. It's kind of always been known, you know, for horse racing town, and then, you know, the track has the casino, which helps supplement the purses, but the track pushes the horse racing. I've been to other tracks with casinos, and you might see advertisement for the casino, but you would see just very minimal about live horse racing. A lot of other tracks I've been to have really been casino, and here it's about the horse racing, and you'll see billboards everywhere. You'll see commercials and come on to live racing. They have an Oakland radio show during the race meet, and they do a great job with their publicity for the live race meet, and I think that helps.
Well, and of course, the Arkansas Derby is right around the corner, actually on April 14th. Do you have anything you're getting ready for that?
I've been helping getting ready a horse of Wayne Lucas's named Sporting Chance. I'm not for sure who's going to ride the horse right at this point. Johnny Velasquez rode him in his past race, and then I seen he won the New Orleans Derby. So I'm not sure if he's going to ride it or not. I'd sure love the opportunity to ride it. Wayne hasn't said anything, but that's really the only prospect that I'm even getting on that's pointed for that race right now.
Well, we hope to see you in the entries, Terry, for the Arkansas Derby. And let's take a step back now, and I don't know too much about you, so tell us where you're from and what it was like for you growing up as a kid. Did you grow up around the racetrack?
I did not. I kind of have a strange story, or different story as far as a racetrack story. I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska, and friends of ours owned racehorses and kind of put the bug in my head. I was always small and pretty athletic, and as I got closer to graduating, they're like, you should be a jockey. Well, here I'm in Omaha, Nebraska. I have no clue. I hadn't been on a horse or around a horse pretty much at all. And my mom worked for United Airlines, and it just so happened that Jack Vanberg was from around there, actually Columbus, Nebraska. And he would fly in often. And my mom introduced herself one day and said that her son was interested in the horse racing business. And anyway, she got us to meet up, and he basically told me, when you graduate high school, you need to get out of here. And I have a farm in Goshen, Kentucky at that time. And I graduated in 90, and I moved right away to Kentucky and pretty much started from the ground up from there. I hadn't been on a horse or anything, and kind of hot walked, groomed, did everything at the farm, from driving tractors to baling hay, and he gave me the opportunity to start getting on horses and learning how to gallop out there in by LaGrange, and I stayed out there about 3 years, 2.5, and he came in one day and said, I learned pretty much all I could on the farm, and I need to get on a racetrack so we can start getting ready to ride, get gate approved and that. So he said at that time he was sending a string from Hot Springs to Exarban in Omaha, knowing that I'd been from there, and he asked if I'd be interested in going to Exarban. So I told him absolutely, and I went in the summer, I believe, of 93 to Exarban. And I had always noticed, being in Kentucky, the Turfway winter meet, a lot of the top jocks left, and it looked like a good opportunity to start an apprenticeship. So that fall, I came back to Kentucky after Exarban, and then I went to Remington, and at Remington, they are still running schooling races at that time. So I rode quite a few schooling races. And then in the fall, I went to Turfway for their fall meet and then started riding the winter meet there. And pretty much from there on, I stayed in Kentucky for, pretty much till 2000, late 90s. And then I ventured out and started going to Prairie Meadows. In Des Moines, Iowa, trainer Don Von Himmel had asked me if I'd be interested in going in there. And basically they had got the casino money and the purses had raised up. So I decided to go there and ride for him, and pretty much ended up basing out of there and kind of left the Kentucky circuit.
Wow. So that is, Darren, that is a very, you know, random chance meeting with the great Jack Vanberg, and what a cool story. And so how was he? Obviously he was very instrumental, extremely instrumental in your involvement with the sport. What kind of a teacher was he?
You know, he was in and out quite a bit, because he had his string pretty much in California, and he was trying to get that farm out there going. So he gave me a great opportunity to put me in the position to get on horses, but he had a guy named Dean Flatland kind of running the farm in Kentucky, and he really taught me everything. Jap opened the doors for me, and Dean taught me how to gallop and ride, and then Jack would come in, check on me and stuff. And and still just till this past year here at Oakland, he'd, you know, be giving me a hard time or congratulating me on good rides and knocking me on bad rides. So we still talk quite a bit, and you know, I would probably never be where I am now if he hadn't given me the opportunity to get in this business. It's just so difficult if you're not kind of born in with family or you need someone to open a door for you to get in.
Well, and that was quite a leap of faith when you graduated high school and just decided to leave home and go to Goshen, Kentucky. And you had to be a little bit nervous at the time, given that you didn't know too much about racing. What was that like, leaving home for the first time?
Well, I always figured, you know, Omaha's always going to be there, and let's go see what happens. And if it doesn't work out, I can go back. And you know, I was doing all the farm work, and I just, you know, I wanted to get on a horse so bad, and they eventually let me. And it was funny, all the help had went out to watch this disaster, and I just rode them around. I can't even remember, a couple times maybe, and they're all just waiting for me to fall off, and I never did. So I guess I did okay. But from then on, I started getting on quite a few horses, and that farm at the time was great. They had an Equitrack, which is gone now, which was a kind of a synthetic surface that Jack had come up with somehow. And they had the little three-horse starting gate. We had a 5/8 track, an indoor track. So I was able to get a lot of time on horseback, and pretty much learned quite a bit in that two-year time frame.
Well, you mentioned you were athletic as a kid, so did when you first started getting on horses, did it come pretty easily to you? Obviously, you said you didn't fall off. They were all waiting for you to fall off. But
yeah, no, I picked it up really quick. I always rode motorcycles and motocross and in gymnastics, and I think the gymnastics is a key on balance and stuff. But I kind of crossed it over as kind of the same as being on a motorcycle, just stay in the center and try to keep your balance in the middle. And it really came pretty easy, but I think both of them things helped me out a lot, just with balance and being able to ride and stay in the middle, leg on each side.
So did you decide as soon as you started getting on horses that this was for you? This is what you wanted to do and you wanted to be a jockey?
Yeah, pretty much. I had that in my head even before I got on horses, and I'm just thankful that it worked out. I had enough of school, and I love being outside, and I was like, man, what a great job to be able to ride horses and make money and someone else buying the horses, feeding the horses, and I have the pinnacle of the business. I get to ride these things around and get paid. What a great job.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely is, Terry. And so had you not met Jack Vanberg, what would you have done? Did you know at the time in high school, did you have any other career plans?
Oh, yeah. I had checked in a school in Colorado. I wanted to be a stuntman.
Really?
Yeah, so.
Kind of goes hand in hand.
Kind of adventurous stuff, yeah. So I probably would have, you know, went that avenue, which is also another career that's difficult to get into. Easier these days, but that's what I was leaning towards.
Yeah, you're not an adrenaline junkie, right?
Oh, I love doing the high-risk things, I guess you could say.
So after you left Goshen, Kentucky, you said you went to Axar Bend in Omaha, Nebraska, and that's taking it back. That's an old name there, and a place I don't know anything about. Tell us what it was like there.
Unfortunately, when I got there, it was kind of towards the downward spiral for them. But back in the day, all the older guys talk, it was great. A lot of the circuit, they would come to Oaklawn and then go to Exarban. And so many of the older riders I know and even trainers used to talk about how everyone used to come to the races there. And once again, it was a huge horse racing town. And then the casinos came right there on the river, but on the Iowa side, and it hurt them. Nebraska didn't want to pass or do whatever with the law with the casinos. So I think that hurt that track. But unfortunately, when I was just there for that summer, and, you know, it was pretty much the writing was on the wall that they were closing up. But still, I had a good time. I rode my first race there. Funny story. So Jack knew I was from there, and I told him, you know, I have a lot of family here that won't travel, but they would sure come to the races. I want to ride one before the meet's up. And he is like, oh, we will. And at that time, the assistant there was Ralph Irwin, who now trains at Oaklawn. But it was winding down to the end of the meet, and of course, I've been going to the gate and stuff, but I hadn't got approved or got an apprentice certificate or any of that. And now, literally, it's the last week of racing. And if I remember right, I think the overnights were out to the last day. So Jack came in, and I was like, Jack, all I asked was one thing. I just want to ride one race. If it was 100-1, I didn't care. I told you I had family that won't travel, but they would love to come to the races. So, long story short, he says, well, we'll get you on one. I said, Jack, the overnights are out. But anyway, so my first mount, I believe I rode a horse named Riley's Luck, and I don't even think the bug was claimed on it because I believe R.D. Williams was on it, and he took him off and put me on. And I told Jack, well, I don't have an apprentice certificate, and this is a funny story, too. He just showed up. He had such pull in Nebraska racing that he had an apprentice certificate for me and said, oh, you're good to go now. They said you've been going to the gate. And so he pulled them strings, and I rode that horse Riley's Luck. I believe R.D. was on it, and he let me ride it. So it all worked out, and a lot of my family came out. Horse didn't run any good, but that was besides the fact, just able to ride one in front of everyone. It was great.
What a cool story. He had some pull there, didn't he, Jack Vanberg?
And... Oh, yeah. The streets around the track, there was a couple. There was one named Marion Vanberg, or Marion Avenue, which was his dad. And then there was a Vanberg Avenue that literally, like, were city streets around the racetrack. So he had a lot of pull there at Exarvin.
Raleigh's Luck, the name of the horse. So describe, if you can remember, describe the race to us. You said the horse didn't really run any good, but what was that
like?
No,
I think he ran mid-pack. I probably rode just a terrible race. I do remember being wide all the way, and I can't recall. I know it was a full field, and I was towards the outside, and I kind of broke and just maintained my path around there. And, you know, everyone said, oh, good job, stayed out everyone's way. It was exciting.
And to have your family there, that had to be such a great feeling to have them there to watch your very first race.
Oh, it was a great feeling. You know, I had some grandparents that probably wouldn't have been able to make it if it was out of state. So I was really happy to be able to do that. I just had a big fan base that day. And I think they made signs. And I had friends that I had went to high school with that wouldn't have come otherwise. And still to this day, they run just the little meet at Horseman's Park, and everyone always begs me to come in there and ride. And a few years back, I went in and rode, and I think I won one for Kelly Von Himmel, and we had like 200 in the winner's circle, and he just couldn't believe it. But it was just high school friends, relatives, friends of other friends that I didn't know, but we like filled the whole, they take the picture kind of right there by the finish line, and we filled the whole area up. So it was exciting. So to this day, if I end up in Omaha, I have a big fan base.
I love that. That is awesome, Terry. And how about your mother, given that she was so, you know, influential in getting you in touch with Jack Vanberg? She had to be very proud watching you that day.
Oh, she was, and she still is. She was at Oakland a couple weeks ago. She came for the weekend to the races, and it's just for her to go in, introduce herself, and kind of get the ball rolling. It was a huge help, and she supports me 100%. You know, when I told her I'm going to go ride horses, you know, a lot of parents would be like, "What? You need to go to school or do this or that." And she was like, "All right, well, what do we need to do?" So she's been supportive my whole career.
Jockey Terry Thompson joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Terry, after you left Omaha, Nebraska, you said you went to Remington Park, and you... You rode some schooling races there then.
Yeah, on the dark days there at that time, they'd literally run every Tuesday schooling races, and it could be up to 12 horses, and they paid, you know, pretty good to go ride them, and it was a great experience for me.
Did you ride any parimutuel races that meet? Since you had your, you know, apprentice certificate by that time, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I can't remember. I think I might have rode like three. hardly any, though. I did ride just a few, and I had an agent that was kind of keeping an eye on me for in Kentucky, who at that time had the leading rider, which was Tracy Hebert. Mm. And so I had a plan in action, and like I said, I knew that I wanted to go to Turfway for the winter meet and ride there. And from then, I think I went over to River Downs and rode during the Keeneland meet and till Derby. And once the Derby was over, then I went to Kentucky, rode the rest of Churchill, then Ellis Park, and back to Turfway, and did that circuit forever. And then when Hoosier Park started, I started venturing up that way and riding in Indiana.
When you first arrived at Turfway Park to basically start your apprenticeship, did you feel like you were completely ready? Did you feel confident, or was it a bit of a culture shock? You've never been to Turfway before. How were the riders like in the room?
They're really good. At the time when I was in Goshen, during the winter when Churchill and everywhere was closed and Turfway was the only place running, if we needed to get gate carts for them horses on the farm, we would ship up to Turfway and actually work them over the track out of the gate to get gate carts. So I did have a little experience at Turfway. It wasn't like we were doing that all the time. So I had been there before. And then there's a rider named Dean Coots that took me under his wing. So other riders had, you know, they knew that I was getting ready to start riding. So it wasn't like I just went in there completely blinded, not knowing anybody, and never being there before. So it wasn't too bad, and I felt that I was ready. To look back at now, you know, as a journeyman rider, you know, every apprentice, I think, is so excited to ride that they're ready. And probably 9 times out of 10, all of us could have waited a little bit longer, but we're just ready to get going and ride races. And
I can relate to that, Terry. But hey, let's take a quick commercial break. Stay with us. You are listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. Congratulations to Mitchell Merle as he won the first graded stakes of his career by upsetting the Grade 2 Fairgrounds Oaks aboard Chocolate Martini. Merle finished the week with 5 wins, 5 seconds, and 3 third-place finishes. Alfredo Juarez Jr. had a great week at Sunland as he finished second in the Sunland Derby with Dream Baby Dream and won the Bill Thomas Memorial with Mount Beater. Juarez finished the week third in North America in wins with 8 and added 4 seconds and 3 third-place finishes. Finally, the FoundationDetox.com Jockey of the Week, Tyler Bays, swept all 3 stakes races at Santa Anita this weekend. On Saturday, Bays won the Grade 2 Santa Monica with Selcourt and the Grade 2 San Luis Rey with It's in the Post. The next day, Bays would complete the sweep by winning the Misdirection Stakes aboard Belvoir Bay. Bays won 36% of his mounts from 5 wins, 1 second, and 1 third place finish. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. For all the latest news in the jockey world, visit jockeytalk360.com and follow us on Twitter at Jockey Talk.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
They're at the top of the stretch. Peyton Doro trying to do it in front-running style here. Turns for home in the black-eyed Susan from Stage Trick. Casanova move on the outside. And Bon Jovi Girl, then Stone Legacy and Combinate. Furlong and a half left to go. And Peyton Doro still strong by 2 from Bon Jovi Girl, who shifted out to the center of the Pimlico track to make one last-ditch effort to come after Peyton Doro. Peyton Doro is holding well, though. It's Peyton Doro and Terry Thompson from Bon Jovi Girl by a length and a half in the black-eyed Susan. Third will be Casanova move. Close for fourth, Combinate, Stage Trick.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, Christina McManigle, and I am joined tonight by jockey Terry Thompson. So Terry, as a kid from Omaha, Nebraska, who had no connections in the racing industry, and then you end up winning at Pimlico, the black-eyed Susan of all stakes, what were you feeling that day? That had to be awesome, awesome feeling.
Oh, it was. It was so exciting. Larry and I had talked about that race the night before, and there wasn't much speed in there. And she had run big races prior to that up on the front end. So we thought we'd let her run her race. And Pimlico was known for carrying speed. And that day, I believe it had rained a little and the track was fast. And everything worked out just as planned.
Well, and if I remember reading the fractions of that race, you pretty much put them to sleep on the front end, Terry.
Yeah, they let me break out of there and run into that first turn and then just throw the anchor out, as we say, and slowed it way down. And I believe there's one other speed horse, and he kind of stayed back off me and let me dictate the pace. And when we turned for home, I shook her. I shook her the reins a little and shook her up, and she picked it right up. And I knew from then on that we were home free. Hate to get too confident, but I knew what kind of finish she'd have when she was left alone that long in a race. So it was super exciting. And Larry Jones had given me so many opportunities in my career.
Yeah, we'll talk about your connection with Larry Jones in just a second. But Peyton Doro, very nice filly. What success did you two have together following that race?
Where did we go after that? I think we went over to Monmouth and won one of them over there. And we might have. It's been so long ago. I think we won some at Delaware, but I think the next big one, I believe, was at Monmouth Park.
And so now talk about Larry Jones, Terry, just a legend and what a respectable guy and great trainer. Tell us how you first connected with Larry.
I had known Larry from back in the Kentucky days at Ellis Park, and when I had the bug. And Larry always seemed like the type of guy that wanted to ride one rider and stick with them. When I was around that circuit, he always rode a rider named Tony D'Amico. But Larry and I got hooked up. He started coming to Prairie Meadows, and we got hooked up there in Oaklawn. And then, 2009, he decided to opt out of not going to Prairie Meadows and start going out east to Delaware. And at that time, I didn't really want to go. He asked me if I did, and I didn't. And then the following year, he didn't have to convince me, but he told me he had a lot of nice babies coming up, and if I was interested in going, he could sure use a rider. He was riding Gabriel Saez from out there, but he had so many babies. So I told him, you know what, I'd sure like to go out there. So 2010, I went out there and was able to ride the Frisian Fire, old-fashioned, Kodiak Cowboy, just a lot of great horses. Yeah. And our record for stakes, like shipping out of town, was just crazy good. I mean, I think we went to Monmouth with just Jinda and a couple other horses, and I don't know exact stats, but I think literally we went for like 8 or 9 stakes and won 7 of them, and won at Belmont with Island Sand. A lot of great fillies. Larry's known for doing such a great job with fillies, but boys also with Old Fashioned and Hard Spun. And as far as some of the bigger horses I've ridden in my career, Larry Jones has given me some of the best opportunities for some of the biggest races that I've been able to win as far as the graded stakes.
Yeah, Terry, you mentioned some pretty big names there, and probably biggest name you mentioned, 8 Bells. The opportunity to ride the Great Filly actually in the Martha Washington at Oaklawn, of all places. And
yes,
tell us what you thought of her.
You know, she's come up a lot because everyone has that question. What's the best horse you ever rode? And I'd probably have to say she was, for me. Just her turn of foot, from just how quick she turned it on and could close ground, was just amazing. And, you know, I kind of got a crazy story on her. So Ramon Dominguez was supposed to ride her in the Oaks. She was entered in the Oaks and the Derby. But if they scratched out of the Oaks, Ramon was riding something else in the Derby, so he was committed. Well, as we all know, she ended up running in the Derby and not the Oaks. So Gabriel Saez and I both had won on her. Both had been riding for the owner, Rick Porter. And Larry felt that it wasn't fair to just pick one of us to ride her, so he flipped a coin. So I lost a coin toss on riding her in the Kentucky Derby, which it ended up, you know, she did run a great race, but afterwards the disaster and all that. But still, it's not too often you hear that there's a flip of a coin for riding a horse in the Kentucky Derby, but that was one of the stories on 8 Bells for me.
Yeah, I've never heard of that before. That's pretty wild.
True story.
Wow. And of course, yeah, as everyone knows, she ran a huge race to run second that year. And then, of course, such a shame what happened following the race. And I don't know what your thoughts were on that, but were you maybe almost a little bit glad you didn't ride her in the Derby, given, you know, the devastating consequences?
You know, I didn't know either way, to be honest with you. I know Larry took a lot of grief over that, but, you know, it was nothing that you could point the finger at anyone. It was just a terrible accident. I don't know either way. Still to this day, I don't know if maybe the outcome would have been different. You just don't ever know. So, I sure would have liked to have had the opportunity to ride her. It's such a difficult to make it to the Derby. There's so many great riders that have great careers, that have leading rider titles all over, that never get the opportunity to make it to that race. And just to be able to have made it is just a great thrill in my career. Ranks right up with some of my better wins, even though I didn't win, but still was just an awesome feeling.
Well, and then you did also get to ride in the Breeders' Cup for Larry Jones.
Yes. Yep. Ruby's Reception, which a little gray filly that won the Fantasy at Oaklawn, and that was the same year that I won the Arkansas Derby and the Fantasy. And I was told that hadn't been done before, the same rider win both. So that was exciting to win them two big races. And Sir Cherokee winning the Arkansas Derby and making it to the Kentucky Derby and then scratching the day before was just the all-time high and the all-time low. And then Ruby's reception, you know, winning the fantasy, and then by fall running in the two-year-old filly Breeders' Cup at Arlington Park was just was exciting too.
How did she run that day?
She ran mid-pack and ended up coming back sick and probably wasn't at the best of her game, but that's, once again, that's just the bad luck and just luck of the horse racing. She was pretty sick after that race.
Yeah, you've experienced a lot of highs and lows, Terry, but that's
I have.
That's common in this sport, you know. But
They're up and down in the thoroughbred industry, that's for sure.
Definitely is. And that day that you rode in the Breeders' Cup, that was at Arlington Park that day. And I heard that you really wanted to get a feel for how the track was playing. And you actually took off, I guess, to go ride up, what was it, the day before?
Yeah, I just went, rode a few, I think two races, just to see how the track was playing. I had never ridden there before. And I didn't have much going on, and I thought, you know, it might benefit me for the big race, Breeders' Cup day. So it was, if I was to do it again, I would do the same thing.
And I forget, was that, had they already installed the poly track at Arlington?
No, they had not. It was a dirt track still at that time.
Jockey Terry Thompson joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Terry, you mentioned Sir Cherokee in the Arkansas Derby. And, of course, you know, the disappointment of that horse scratching before the Derby. But what was he like to ride?
He was really easy. He had just one run, and he just sat back and hoped all the stars aligned, and they give you a hot pace to run at. And the day in the Arkansas Derby, they did. They went really quick early, and everything just worked out perfect for that horse. Turning up the backside, he was in last by several lengths and just started passing horses little by little. And coming down the stretch, inside the eighth pole, I knew I had them all. And it was exciting because he was a big, long shot. And I had been riding a different horse that had went to Keeneland to run, and I believe Jerry Bailey rode that horse that day, and I was a little discouraged that I didn't have the opportunity to go and ride him, and ended up picking up Sir Cherokee for Mike Tomlinson. And everything happens for a reason, and he run, you know, just a great race. And to win the Arkansas Derby, I hadn't won that one at that time yet. So that was a great day.
Yeah, Terry, I just looked up the chart of that race. He came from almost 17 lengths out of it, and he paid $113. That's pretty impressive.
Yes. Yeah, he was 30 or 40 to 1. And, you know, like I said, he's just loping along back in the back of the pack, and they did go extremely fast that day. And he made just a great run from the 3/8 pole on in and passed everybody.
Pretty impressive. And yeah, to hear that he scratched right before the Derby, that had to be incredibly disappointing. Did you get an opportunity to ride him afterwards once he recovered?
Yes, I did. I won a nice stake in Sam Houston on him. He ran a big race that next year and won one of the stakes over there. So I was able to, you know, get another win out of him. But, yeah, I had flown to Kentucky, and it literally was Oaks Day, and trainer Mike Tomlinson had called me and said he had some bad news. They're keeping him over away from all the commotion at the sports spectrum and, you know, trying to do the right thing from the horse and keeping him from all the press and everything. And something had it gotten him excited, and he had kicked the wall and chipped a back leg, and just it was so disappointing. I was there, and family was there, and we're literally 24 hours out from the Kentucky Derby, and got the news, and it was just heartbreaking, actually.
Ugh. So disappointing, but glad to hear you guys had success together afterwards. So obviously we talked about Abe Bell. She's really the nicest horse you've ever sat on. Who would you say, is she your favorite? Does someone else take that title as your favorite horse? I mean, you had a lot of success with No Such Word, Sure Shot Biscuit.
Nah, you just said the name, Christina. Sure Shot Biscuit's got to be. I won so many races on him. He ended up being the only Iowa bred in history to go over a million in purses. And long, short, grass, it didn't matter. You line him up in the gate, and he would run and give you everything he had. And I just won so many races on him. He's probably one of my favorites.
Wow. Iowa bred. That's incredible. All the success
yeah.
you guys had together. I think the statistic I read, and this could be outdated, but that you guys won 14 races together. That's incredible.
Yep, that sounds about right. And he won out of state too. I believe he won at Keeneland, and he won at Hoosier Park and Oakland, and in Nebraska he won. So he was stamped Iowa bred, but he was a nice horse.
Who trained him?
Kelly Von Himmel.
Sure. Impressive record you have with him for sure, Terry. And let's take a second now. We talked about your career highlights, and let's take a second to talk about some of the lows. You've had quite a few injuries.
Yeah. You hate to say it in our business, like a broken collarbone. Oh, no big deal. I had a broken collarbone. Oh, I broke my ankle. That's no big deal. But I had two major injuries. I broke my femur at Prairie Meadows, and I was off literally like 11 months, I believe. I broke it in 9 places, and to this day have a titanium rod through my femur with several screws. And to come back off of that was you know, it could have been a career-ending injury. And then I was only riding, I rode the Oakland meet and came to Iowa and had a morning accident where a 2-year-old fell on me, and I had broke my upper right and left upper lower pubic bone in my left sacrum and my tailbone, and was off forever. Another 6-7 months on that. So them two injuries stand out, but there has been, you know, several others, but them two are the two that really probably affected a lot of wins for my career. And just that was a lot of time to be off with two injuries.
Gosh, that sounds terrible. And I think I read when you broke your femur that you were, you know, competing for the leading rider title, I think, at Prairie Meadows at the time. And so that had to be really frustrating.
Yeah. It was one that really got me. I broke a wrist, but I pretty much had the riding title sewed up at Oakland Park. And there was 3 or 4 weeks left, and I had broke a wrist, and that one was really disappointing. I ended up just getting beat by a few wins, and James Lopez ended up winning the title, but it looked like I was home and cooled out for another title at Oakland. And that one was kind of taken away from me, so that one was bad. And then the Prairie Meadows one, we had quite a bit of the meet left, but I was really far in front and ended up getting caught, but that injury, it was a bad injury, so I was more thinking about that than worrying about a title at that time, because my leg was broke really bad at the Prairie Meadows
injury. Did you ever think While you were recovering from one of these horrific injuries, did you ever think that, did you ever have any doubts about coming back?
No, the femur, my knee, took forever to get the most range back, but I knew I'd be back. It was just a matter of how long it would take me. And, like I said, it took a while, but I made it back.
I've shared this story on the show before, Terry, but I got to tell you, when I would get injured riding, I would be laid up watching TVG, and I'd throw the remote at the TV whenever I was watching a horse that I knew I should be riding win, and it was the most frustrating thing in the world. So I can't even imagine how that was when you're competing for the leading rider title, and it's just can't be fun.
And then right, and then on the pelvis injury, at that time I was riding Island Sand, and when I was laid up, speaking of that and watching TVG, I was laid up and Jerry Bailey rode her in the $1 million over at Delaware, and she won, and I was like, my jaw hit the ground and was like so discouraged that I wasn't able to go ride her, because Larry sure would have let me ride her if I wasn't injured at the time.
Mm. Brutal. Oh my gosh. Well, then let's talk about something a little bit different now. You rode Dublin, trained by Dwayne Lucas, in the Derby, and finished, I believe, 7th that day. And obviously, like you mentioned before, riding in the Derby was just such a high for you. But he took you off the horse for the Preakness, and that had to be hard to deal with.
Yeah, but he did. I sure wanted to ride Dublin, but he put me on the other one. And so I did ride the Preakness for him, but I did want to ride Dublin. And I rode, I got a blank right now. I can't think of his name. His other horse in the Preakness, and Garrett Gomez rode Dublin in there. And he ended up, he was notorious, just a bad actor, and wanted to duck out all the time. And that day in the Preakness, he drew an outside post, and sure enough, he ducked out on Garrett, which he got him straightened right back up and running. But he was a difficult horse to ride, Dublin was.
Well, and I had to laugh when I was doing research for this show, Terry. The article that I read, Lucas was quoted as saying, "We should have stayed with Terry Thompson. The horse ran better for him than anybody." So it made me laugh, you know.
yeah. And Wayne, you know, he knew the Sir Cherokee story, and he was letting me ride Dublin at Oakland, and I run 3rd in the Arkansas Derby, and I got to give Wayne credit. I have a feeling the owners put pressure on him to maybe try to switch riders, and Wayne stood up for me, and he told me we're going to make it to the Derby together, and he stuck to his word, and I actually made it to the Derby and got to ride it, and once again, like I said earlier, it ranks right up with one of the highlights of my career, even running 7th in there, but just coming out the tunnel and they're singing My Old Kentucky Home, and it's just a great experience.
How do you prepare for a race like the Derby? It's obviously, you're dealing with a lot more horses than you usually would. So how do you prepare? Obviously, most jockeys study the racing form and watch replays and things like that. But how do you prepare for the Kentucky Derby?
Really, there's no way to. You have 20 horses in there if they end up all running and not having any scratches. And you know, a lot of times in that race, the best horse might not win. It's just who has the best trip. And it's just crazy going down to that first turn and all them horses. And you just have to have a little racing luck on your side, have a decent trip, and be able to pick your way through the pack if that's your running style, or if you're up towards the front, you know, shake free and try to have a clean trip. But it's a difficult race to prepare for, because there's nothing you can really do to actually load in the gate with 20 horses. It's, you just got to do it, and You can study the racing form, like you said, and kind of guess how the race is going to unfold. But you just need to try to put yourself in a position where you don't get mixed up in a bunch of trouble and have a clean trip.
I want to ask you a question, Terry. The track was sloppy that day you rode the Derby with Dublin. How many goggles did you wear? I'm just curious.
You know, normally on your normal sloppy track, I might take four or five, and I think all of us had it, probably six. You get too many stacked on there, and you can't hardly get them on. This deck's so tall, but I believe that day there was six and just so many horses, and it was sloppy. And, you know, it rained right till the Derby that year, 2010?
Yeah, 2010. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the sun popped out for the Derby, and it was sunny, and the race ran, and then it started raining afterwards. It was the craziest thing ever.
Well, Terry, we only have about a minute or so left. This time's been flying by here. I want to bring up something pretty cool. You posed shirtless for the Barbara Livingston calendar. That was several years ago, but I remember when that came out, and
yeah,
that had to be fun.
It was, you know, I actually went to New York and they took the pictures. Kent DeSormo gave me a call one night and was like, hey, you want to be in a calendar? I was like, what kind of calendar? He said, you know, like the firemen calendars and police calendars and Beefcake. He says, for riders. I was like, you got to be kidding me. And he goes, no, they would like, you know, you to be one of the 12. And I was like, I told him I'm all in for that. And it was great. Got to go to New York, get some pictures taken, and just to be, there's so many riders out there, and for them to contact me out of 12 other guys, and it was a lot of fun. I was really glad that I had the opportunity to do that.
I love it. We got to see your artwork too, Terry. You got quite the collection of tattoos. I love it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so might be one reason why they picked me, but I don't know. But it was, I still get a lot of comments on that calendar. I think that picture's still floating around somewhere on the internet. But every once in a while, someone will have one of them calendars and still to this day want me to sign it. Or if some of the other writers are in at Oakland, I've seen them signing them calendars. But that was a lot of fun.
I love it, Terry. Unfortunately, we are all out of time, however, and thank you so much for joining us and wishing you all the best, Terry.
Well, thank you, and thanks for having me, and before we know it, the Derby will be over your way.
Right around the corner. Folks, you can check out this show and replays of all of our other shows on the website at horseracingradio.net. While you are there, check out all of the other great shows you can find here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Don't forget our new channel, XM201. For our producer, Lee Della Pina, I am Christina McManigal, and thank you for listening.